Hello and welcome to our University of Strathclyde podcast series, run out of the world-famous School of Education, right in the heart of the beautiful city of Glasgow in Scotland. We bring you a mix of meeting academic interviews, thought pieces, conversations and provocations on all things education, to give you a glimpse into our world-leading education research here at Strathclyde, and of course to stimulate your questions and thinking around the meaning, purpose and practice of education. In schools, in communities, and of course in all our lives.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the School of Education podcast. Today we are joined by Professor Kate Wall, who's going to give us a mini lecture on the topic Exploring the Method of Practitioner Inquiry for Understanding Teacher Professional Learning. So we'll hear from Kate for about 20 minutes or so, and then I'll try and catch her out by asking some questions. So, Kate, over to you.
Hi, Claire. Thank you. Okay, so what I wanted to talk a bit about today was some of the origins of practitioner inquiry, particularly, and we'll think a bit about both the professional learning origins and also the methodological implications, probably, as well as origins of practitioner inquiry, and then think about, well, what does that mean for the practice of practitioner inquiry in terms of understanding professional learning? Where I wanted to start was with thinking about where practitioner inquiry comes from. And if you look at the literature, I suppose the key person that talks about this is John Dewey, and the idea of teachers engaging in pedagogic inquiry and the idea that teachers questioning and looking for answers around what was going on in their practice was really important. From those roots, you can see the work of people like John Elliott and Lawrence Stenhouse that are promoting the idea of a research-engaged practitioner and the idea of research-informed practice. So here we have teachers identified as problem solvers, as naturally talented, almost in the moment, finding answers to questions that arise in practice. And that means teachers taking an active stance. So not as a passive reaction to what goes on in the classroom, but something that has strategic and reflective elements. And I'll come back to that. For me, practitioner inquiry also has a strong ethical prerogative linked to social justice, this idea that as a profession, we have to strive to understand and get better, that will never be sorted, that will never be perfect. The work of Susan Groundwater Smith has been particularly influential in my thinking about this ethical drive that many teachers have to find out more, to understand better, to improve the outcomes for the children in their care. And not to do so, to not to try and problem solve, not to try and find answers, is unethical, I think. And so that drive to do it, to be better, is an important part of what we need to understand as teacher learning. So if we accept that thinking around teacher learning, that ethical prerogative, the idea of teachers as problem solvers, the idea of the research engaged practitioner, which comes from that, then we also have to think about how this methodology of practitioner inquiry fits into the research literature, because it is a research approach, and I would challenge anyone that said otherwise. So if we put the teacher learning stuff to one side at the moment, and we'll come back to it, and think about the relationship of practitioner inquiry into education research and social science more generally. This can be a challenge, and there can be some that dismiss practitioner inquiry as teacher noodling. And it's not, I don't think it is. I think that teachers who are engaged in problem solving, who are thinking about research approaches, will start to engage in and with research. So that's in the process of doing research and with reading and listening to other types of research. So there is a clear connection in to education research, social science in my head. One of the challenges comes from the positioning of the researcher and practitioner inquiry. They are located in the scenario that they are exploring. They are experts in their concept, in their context. They know the children, they know the nuance and complexity of the culture and the environment. And that positioning makes some of the academic research links quite challenging. So if we look at the academic research model, it is often written from the perspective of a university researcher who is out with the school system or the system that's under examination and is therefore somewhat remote and able to judge and explore without biases and skews. And many times I read practitioner inquiry research reports, doctorates, where people apologize for a level of skewedness or bias in their research. And I think that that's really problematic because actually the value of practitioner inquiry is that bias, is that skew, is that expertise about the context. If I was to go into somebody's classroom and do the research, I would get a very different outcome to the teachers if the teacher was doing that research. And I think that's an important insight that rather than apologizing for it as not as valid, we need to recognize as different and as another part of the lens on this thing called education research. One of the other challenges that comes with this academic model of research is that we tend towards a type of research that is overly theoretical, is not linked into practice. And that's the practice of research as well as the practice of education. And so we read about research method and we read about it in a way that doesn't fit with our understanding. So if you're positioned in the setting and you're reading research textbooks that are about research by a researcher who is distanced, then that is difficult to apply. There are links into the education research literature that I think are helpful and are a window that gives us certain permissions. The likes of action research, I think, is really helpful. The cyclical nature of action research helps us to engage in the role of action alongside research, although Hammersley would argue that that's a bit of an oxymoron, to be involved in research and action at the same time. That's equally important. We can look at the work around participatory methods, this idea of working with participants is really helpful because what you often find with practitioner inquiry is that it's a teacher working with the students, with the learners to engage in this topic of interest. We've also got some useful insights from things like ethnography and phenomenology, where cycles of iterative exploration are ongoing and are recognizing the importance of nuance, of authenticity, of trustworthiness, of credibility, all of which I think practitioner inquiry builds on. And the last area of research, I think, of social science research literature that I think is really helpful is mixed methods research, where commentators are thinking about how we combine quant and qual in a complex dynamic that not only includes the data collection process, but also synthesis, analysis, and reporting. And there are certain underpinnings there that I think are very helpful, particularly for the teacher who is mixed methods in their very nature. When you get a new class, you are looking at the summative assessment marks that are assigned to each of those children, but you're also listening to the vignettes, the pen portraits that are offered by previous teachers. That's mixed method in my head, to make judgments about those children and what they need as they join you for the next academic year. The other thing about mixed methods research that has been an opportunity for me is the link with John Dewey again. So John Dewey and his ideas around pragmatism have been co-opted by some of the mixed methods researchers as an alternative paradigm, as a pragmatic way of thinking about research. And if you look at the works of someone like Feltzer, they talk about the quant and qual coming together to give a pragmatic engagement with the research agenda. And I think that that's been very helpful in me, because I can see the work in John Dewey in terms of pedagogy, but here I'm hearing about his work in regards methodology. And that has helped me to bring this idea of practitioner inquiry and research methodology closer together. So what we've got is a slightly difficult and murky route into social science literature, but a window that is opening up and should be enabling of the practitioner inquirer to locate their work. They have to be clever, they have to be active in the way that they read that literature, and not be, I'm going to use the word beaten down by it, but not feel like they're needing to apologize, but that they can codify what they're doing. And one of the things I want to emphasize in practitioner inquiry is that it is not just a professional learning tool. It is a professional learning tool, and I believe it's a really effective one, but it can also be a practice that is taken up to doctorate level. So I supervise students who are undertaking doctorate level inquiry using a practitioner inquiry frame. Indeed, I believe that the complexity, the nuance, the positioning of the researcher in a practitioner inquiry doctorate, with one foot in school and one foot in the academic literature, leads for a really complex dynamic that takes students to a doctorate level very quickly. It's challenging to write about when you have these multiple parallel agendas going on, and you are negotiating a position between research and practice, between theory and practice, that is codified in both directions. So in terms of what practitioner inquiry looks like when you're doing it, it's a cyclical model where the research approach is closely aligned to the idea of plan, do, review. And I think, again, that is starting to think about these parallels between sort of the professional learning, practice orientation, and the research theory element. What we argue is that at its very basic level, practitioner inquiry is teachers undertaking that plan, do, review cycle that we're taught on ITE to undertake. And with increased confidence and some structure, then they start to think about how they can orientate the do element to think about how they can collect some systematic evidence, and the review element to think about what does that evidence tell me and how can I share that. And so Lawrence Stenhouse had the tagline that we use quite regularly, systematic inquiry made public. So it's planned review, but with that added element of systematic evidence collection and the orientation to share. Now, how systematic that evidence is, we can discuss. How public the sharing is, we can also discuss. And I've argued that it will depend on your intention in regard to your practitioner inquiry. when life is busy, there's a pandemic going on, and you're juggling huge amounts of different aspects, then your plan do review and how and the element of systematic inquiry made public will be relatively turned down. You might just share with the teacher next door to you. The evidence will be totally embedded in the pedagogy and of practice. But if you are undertaking a doctorate, then you will need to turn up the volume on the systematic evidence, and you will need to codify it far more into the social science literature in the ways that I've already discussed. And you will need to turn up how public it is, because you're going to write a thesis and it's going to be examined. So thinking about these skills as something that's not predetermined, but can be turned up and turned down. I've used the idea of a graphic equalizer from the 1980s, because that's what I desired when I was a kid, on a stereo. There are different elements you can turn up and turn out, and that helps to make practitioner inquiry manageable and doable in the normal run of practice, but also something that can be undertaken for higher qualification. In terms of the kind of questions that teachers ask when they're problem solving, there are two kinds of questions that we predominantly see. The first one is a what happens if question. What happens if I change X? What happens if I do this thing? And those are aligned with a sort of intervention model of research. And those are the ones that are most common in the practitioner inquiries I read. What's challenging here is if you codify those up into the research literature, then they tend to be associated with models of research that are quasi-experimental. You're heading into research literature that talks about control groups and pre and post-test data. And that's difficult when you're working in real life, when there are multiple agendas already going on, multiple interventions being applied. And they also, if you read the theory, suggests that the researcher is distanced, is not a variable, is dressed in a metaphorical white coat, that and so is trying to not impact. And that's where the apologies for bias and skews come in. The other kind of question that teachers ask, and these are lesser because of the dominance in policy at the moment and research agenda, is towards those what happens if, those intervention type models. But the what's going on questions, which are the other type, are the ones where you're observing, where you're finding out more. And the what's going on questions are really helpful in a practice setting, because they are about really understanding what's going on when you do that thing, really understanding where what's going on when that strange thing happens with that group of children. What's going on questions are aligned with the more ethnographic, phenomenological approaches in the social science literature. They have that nod to the nuance, those iterative cycles. And if I think they're honest, they're easier for teachers to do while codifying into the literature and being embedded in the setting. What we actually find is most the confident experienced practitioner inquiry is they tend to do a mixture of the two. So they do a what happens if question, change something, and then they'll take a step back and observe what's happening and find out a bit more before doing another intervention or another change to see what's going on. They work in a dynamic. What's important here is the relevancy to practice. And I think in a fast-paced education system, those what going on moments are really important. Those times when teachers take a step back and just observe and find out a bit more. We need to emphasize that a bit more rather than the continual pressure to make a change, to do it, to make something different, to alter something, to try and be solution orientated. In the immediacy, that pace is not sustainable. So we need both. And I think that's really important. Within this cyclical model of practitioner inquiry, evidence is obviously important, but to try and make this process manageable, we need to embed evidence in a pedagogically appropriate frame. And so thinking about schools as evidence rich, as having a lot of evidence already available, rather than immediately thinking, oh, I'm doing research, I've got to go to the traditional research methods techniques. So thinking about assessment strategies, for example, formative, summative, informal, formal, all of those are well developed in a teacher's repertoire. And so thinking about how they might be helpful in embedding evidence in your practitioner inquiry cycles without having to do extra, without having to take up a Sunday afternoon to design a questionnaire or lunchtimes to do interviews with kids. They are a pragmatic way of thinking about the evidence that you already are using, because teachers use evidence all the time. We just need to be confident in that ability and recognize that that is just as useful, if not more useful, because it's contextualized and it's relevant to the kids and the kids understand it and it doesn't take up your time, to be used within a practitioner inquiry frame. And I've got doctorate students using that kind of evidence, creative approaches, embedded techniques to explore that thing they're interested in using practitioner inquiry. So there's no need to think of that as lesser or not as important. It's more appropriate, and we need to recognize that as important. Practitioner inquiry is not a solitary activity, so that bit about making it public is really important. And so recognizing that the process by which you share that practitioner inquiry and check your sense making as you go through the process is fundamental in ensuring that we are doing something that's sensible, that is codified not only into the research literature, but also into the practice. And so practitioner inquiry communities become really important. Elaine and I have written about the type of culture that needs to be developed in these inquiry communities. We've talked a lot about the need for autonomy. It's really important that practitioner inquiry questions are embedded in the participant's practice, in the individual's practice. It is not for me or for a senior colleague or for just the other year four P4 teacher down the corridor to say, no, I don't think you should be doing that. If that's what's interesting and that's what's useful, if that's what's going to make a difference, then that's what you need to do. In addition, autonomy is about choosing the right evidence and making sure that you are choosing evidence that is pedagogically appropriate to your setting, to your learners, and to your workload. Practitioner inquiry communities also have to be open to dialogue about process and outcomes as equally important. Too often practitioner inquiry is about just the outcomes, and we share our pretty poster and our endpoint in celebratory events, and they're important, but they do tend to promote this idea that all professional learning is shiny and perfect, whereas we all know that the process of learning can be full of challenges and dilemmas and difficulties. And so creating a practitioner inquiry community where dialogue is equally relevant about difficult moments as those shiny outputs is important. So prioritizing process and outcomes is important, and thinking about who might be interested in that in the community of learners. So sharing not only with peers, but also with students might be appropriate. The community also has to accept challenge. And so then when you undertake practitioner inquiry, you're not likely to find an easy answer. You're likely to find more inquiry questions. And so you need to be ready for that. There is no simple connection of an input and an output within a complex ecology like practice. And you also need to be challenged by others' process and outcomes. So it might be really difficult to hear that someone else has done this thing that you were not aware of, or that you don't agree with their process. But in the practitioner inquiry, it's not to say that's not appropriate for them to do. It's about being inclusive and thinking about how you learn from that. The final principle of practitioner inquiry is to make sure it's connected into practice. So making connections in regards how you do things, the kinds of evidence you collect, the usefulness of the outcomes and the process undertaken. There is a clear mirror effect that we see in practitioner inquiry between the pedagogies and process and outcomes of practitioner inquiry and what is then happening in the practice settings in the classrooms of these teachers. So teachers who are undertaking inquiry are more likely to be metacognitive, but they're also likely to have metacognitive students in their classrooms. Teachers who have a voice are more likely to have students who have a voice. Inquiry pedagogies in teacher learning is likely to be mirrored in inquiry pedagogies in the classroom. Teachers who are leading their own learning, who are active and able to articulate their thinking about what they're learning, are likely to have similar dispositions and skills appearing in the learners in their care. And there is a catalytic relationship between them, because the more connected we get, the better and more tightly the feedback loops in that mirror effect are happening. But that's challenging, because if we have that complexity, when we're aware of multiple parallels and multiple mirror effects happening, that's where the complexity just expands and blows up. And that's where doing a doctorate using practitioner inquiry is a challenge, because the practitioner inquiry needs to be resilient to the things that they don't know, the cumulative learning that will happen through doing practitioner inquiry, but also the political nature of what they might find out and the inherent dilemmas and tensions that they will discover in trying to find out more. And for me, that's probably the parting thought that I've got, is around the fact that practitioner inquiry for me is an inherently political thing. It is about building resilience in the professional body, but it's also about building a voice for the professional body to talk confidently and an informed way about what's going on in classrooms around the country, around being able to be clear about not just what was done, but also why you did it that way, and being confident and robust in reflecting and deflecting any critique. That's not to say you're not hearing the critique, you are, but it's about being able to articulate not just what you did, but why you did it in a way that the professional discourse can hear. And I hope that made sense.
Thank you very much. That was great. I suppose I've got a couple of questions. I like the idea of a community of practitioner inquiry, because for me it resonates with work that we did in Scotland based at Strathclyde, in part in the applied educational research scheme that we had back in the mid-2000s. So I think our first publication was in 2007, and it was communities of educational inquiry. And I think the ideas that you're presenting in terms of what's needed in a community of practitioner inquirers resonates really strongly with that. And I suppose my question is around, what's the connection between practitioners in school settings, say, and those of us working in universities in terms of advancing practitioner inquiry?
So I think that the leaders of practitioner inquiry are really important. So I often challenge colleagues and policymakers and head teachers around, where's your practitioner inquiry? So it's really important that we are modelling, and I include myself, I would identify myself as a practitioner inquirer. And it's taken me a long time to do that, if I'm honest, in the university system. But it's important that I model my inquiry. I may be a professor of education, but I don't have it all sorted. I've still got lots and lots of questions, and I'm still striving with an ethical prerogative to try and better and find out more myself, my practice, and find out more. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. It can happen when I'm teaching doctorate level groups, or when I'm in a P7 classroom on a Monday afternoon. I haven't got it sorted. And that's really important to model that striving to learn, that my learning is ongoing. And just because I'm in a promoted post with access to a big library of books doesn't mean that I have those answers. So in terms of what should we do, we need to lead in our learning and be articulate in the inquiry process that is ongoing in our practice. And I think that a lot of people are pretty good at that, but where we forget is particularly in promoted posts and policymakers. And to just talk about that process as equal to outcomes. So we might share a neat 6,000 word article that's taken hours and hours and days to compose, but actually there's a lot of working out that goes on behind that. There'll be some successes and some failures behind that. And so being clear about that research and metacognition is really important. So we need to be more honest, be more transparent, and share the learning, because our professional learning doesn't stop.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that what I find interesting reading what you say is around this idea of who's leading practitioner inquiry and our leadership and modelling of it. And I used the word hour there, and I'm conscious of it, because when you were talking, you said we need to recognise what teachers do is important. And I started to think, well, who's the we in that situation? And the idea that certain approaches, practitioners are looking for permission. And it strikes me as there needs to be something of a shift in dynamic. Who is it that the practitioners are seeking permission from? Is it the university academic community? Is it themselves? Is it their line managers? This idea of needing permission to undertake practitioner inquiry and have it validated, and by whom, is really quite interesting. And I think it, for me, it relates to that idea of what's the relationship between practitioners and those of us that work in universities. And I wondered if there's something to be said for shifting the power. I know there's expertise in the university that perhaps some practitioners don't have, but I wonder if we should be shifting the balance of leadership to the practitioners in some sense.
In the communities of practitioner inquiry that I've worked with, then they have been incredibly inclusive, and the power dynamic has been relatively flat. So I can't do practitioner inquiry in schools without working in partnership with teachers. And so therefore, there is a locus of control that is relatively equal. You know, I bring a set of expertise, but I do not have the expertise on their setting. They have that and they own it. And so recognizing that and foregrounding it becomes really important. And what we see in schools where practitioner inquiry communities are well embedded is that the probationer is seen to have expertise, that the head teacher is seen to have expertise, but they are all adding to the story of that culture and that community's capacity building around practitioner inquiry. Sometimes we get it wrong, sometimes we get it right. And that's why I think it's really important for leaders to fail sometimes and be honest about their failures, to be honest about having questions, because exactly the same as a probationer, we might have different questions, we might have the same questions. And again, that's why I emphasise practitioner inquiry is a political movement, because it is trying to change the voices that have a say. And it's not recognising anyone as lesser or more. It's about different perspectives that might be useful. And we need those multiple lenses on what goes on in our schools. I mean, I'm not against experimental research. I think it's a really useful tool for looking at the big ideas. But I also think we need the practitioner inquiry stories of what that practice looks like in the nitty-gritty of the West End of Glasgow. You know, we need both, because we can't understand that thing without having those multiple perspectives. We need that alteration of power, not just in the kind of research that we're doing, but also the voices that we're hearing about what's coming on.
Yeah, and I think that links then with what you're talking about in terms of there being an ethical imperative. I absolutely agree that, well, teaching can only be described as a political endeavour, really, can't it? But this ethical imperative that's upon us as teachers or as researchers, however we want to describe ourselves, is really important when we're talking about who has a voice and that balance of power, I suppose. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, how do we teach that? How do we teach that to our initial teacher education students and then our practicing teachers, when, to be perfectly frank, a lot of them feel quite disenfranchised because they're so put upon by way of administrative burdens or other pressures around things that can be measured and so on. And maybe this plays into that accountability thing, but in a way that suits teachers because they get to drive forward the agenda in terms of what it is they want to investigate. But yeah, how do we teach that kind of ethical, politicised behaviour?
I think that practitioner inquiry as method, so there's some work that came out of South America, Portillo and Medina, I think, Monday morning, and they talk about metacognition as methodology for professional learning, for teacher learning. And I think that that's reflexive and metacognitive, strategic and reflective thinking is scaffolded by the practitioner inquiry process. So practitioner inquiry requires you to reflect back on what has happened and to then be strategic about what you do next. The more that we can be encouraging of the dispositions and skills of that metacognitive thinking behind teaching, they're not just what we do, it's not just what that task or that decision, or it's why we did it. And that links in with, you know, Schoen's idea of reflective practitioner. It links in with Helen Timperley's ideas about teacher theory. It links in to the idea of those plan, do, review cycles that I've been talking about in ITE. But that there is that meta level of thinking about it, that and that will help us to join up and make connections between society, cultures, big agendas, and what we can do about it within the practices of our classrooms. And they need to see the teacher educators doing exactly the same, because they need to be able to hear that they are undertaking practitioner inquiry, that they are still striving to improve. So they need to model. And a lot of the research around metacognition shows that metacognitive learners are more likely with a metacognitive teacher who's talking about their learning all the time. And so, I mean, that's done with kids, but I don't see why it would any different in a teacher education setting. You know, the more teacher educators can talk about their thinking and their thought processes and the connections they're making in their own learning and about practice, then the better for the students. So we need to cement that within our practices at all levels, at all levels.
Thanks very much for that. And I think it's a shame that when you say we should exemplify and talk about our thinking much more, that I'm actually going to cut you off now. And say thank you very much for your time and what was a really interesting mini lecture. I know you spend most of your time talking about these kind of ideas and could go on at great length. So thank you very much for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening in to our Strathclyde Education podcast series. We'll be back soon with another episode.